We're returning now to the topic of conflict, and we're going to, in a moment, discuss how people in the majority world handle conflict. But before we do that, is there any further comment from the previous session? Maybe something that you wanted to say or something that you've thought about since then? I thank you for your other comments. Those were good. In the majority world, meaning outside the Western world, how are they different? Well, as we looked earlier, we discovered that their language was much more indirect. So that rather than speaking directly and saying, you know, we really need to discuss this difference between us, how can we talk about it? What do you think? That immediately would cause the problem to be worse. Because effectively, what you're saying then to the other person is that you're part of the problem. Then they are shamed. They lose face. And immediately now, the whole situation becomes much worse, much more difficult to manage. So then the question is, how do you handle conflict situations in a more indirect way so that we're going to have a peaceful resolution. We're going to have friendship that's maintained. We're going to have a way of understanding each other so there's no longer tension in the relationship. Well, I'm going to give you some situations, and you're going to tell me how you would handle them and see if you understand something about the majority world ways of handling conflict. My friend Don, these are true stories. They actually happened. My friend Don was living in this Asian country. I'll just leave it at that. And his children were coming home from school, and they were feeling unhappy. And at various times, they would say, "Dad, you know, we're not really happy here in this country. We want to go home." And this was starting to get worse and worse. And finally, they were saying, "Dad, why did God send us here anyway? Why are we here?" And they were getting more forceful. Now, as a missionary, when they start to question God, then it becomes really hard to handle, because is this going to cause them to have a crisis of faith? So Don realizes that, so he says, "Well, tell me about the difficulties." "Well, we don't have any friends. People don't relate to us. When we're going to school, if we walk up this side of the street, the other children walk up the other side of the street. Sometimes they'll make some comment and laugh, and sometimes they'll throw a stick or a stone, but they don't want to hurt us. It's just teasing kind of things, and we're not afraid. It's just that we don't seem to be included. We don't seem to have friends. We don't like it here. We want to go home. We had friends there." Now, you're Don or Don's wife. What do you do in this situation? Maybe it would be easier to say, what would the typical Westerner do? What might be their option if they weren't thinking about cross-cultural issues? What might the typical Westerner do?
Maybe talk to the local children, to the children of these parents, and see how they like it. How are they doing? How do they try to make friends? And what attempts they have done? And maybe talk to the teacher in the school and see. Maybe teacher can give some advice.
So try to coach your children as to how to build friendships, to be more assertive in building friendships?
Probably so.
Yeah. See how the local people do it, and then you do it. And talk to the teacher. All right? So talking to your own children could be helpful. The teacher might then feel like you're blaming her a little bit. That's what would happen in a, you know, if we did kind of a typical American thing. She might feel, or he might feel, that you're saying she's or he is partially to cause, the partially to blame for this. If you're going to handle the situation in an Asian way, what's the possibility now? What options do you have? Keeping in mind that they like indirect language, indirect ways of handling conflict.
Well, maybe it would make sense to invite local kids to their house and have a party and show some respect and interest in them and in their culture and try to build friendships by initiating those friendships.
Mm-hmm. That's actually probably a good idea, and maybe it would work. Don, my friend, chose not to do that. He had studied Asian culture, and particularly this culture, and so he thought he would try out what he had learned. It was his custom to go into the market each day and to buy some meat and fruit and vegetables and maybe some flowers, and he would learn his language this way by adding words each day, making more sentences and testing them out. And they got quite familiar with him coming through. So on this particular day now, he goes and the butcher is Mr. Gonzalez. That gives you some clue maybe of the nation. Mr. Gonzalez sees Don coming, and he says, "Mr. Douglas, how are you today? Nice to see you." And my friend Don says, "Well, I'm not feeling so well today. Thank you for asking." "Oh, you're not so well. Well, what is the problem?" "Are you feeling ill?" No, it's a different kind of a situation." "Oh, Mr. Douglas, you must tell me. Please, you must tell me." He says, "Oh, it's my children." "Oh, are they ill? Do they not feel?" No, they're fine, they're healthy, they're good, thank you." "Oh, Mr. Douglas, please tell me." "Well, my children are sad." "Oh, Mr. Douglas, this is unfortunate." "Why are they sad?" "Well, it seems like they have no friends. They had many friends in America, and they've come, and it's been very difficult for them to make friends. And they're very sad about this because we love the people here and we plan to stay a long time and we are enjoying ourselves, but they would like to have more friends." "Oh, Mr. Douglas, yes, I can understand. We must hope something is done about this." Passive voice. Well, he goes on then and see Mrs. Lopez is over here, and he buys some bread from her, and down to Mrs. Lupino over here and gets some flowers, and eventually goes home. And when they say, "Mr. Douglas, how are you today?" he says, "Well, I'm fine, thank you very much." Doesn't, you know, say anything. Well, about 3 days go by, and the children come home on this third day, fourth day, whatever, and they say, "Dad, we're starting to like this place a little bit." And he says, "Really? Why? Why do you say that?" "Well, the children they're paying attention to us. They're inviting us to their activities. They're calling us by our names and asking us to walk with them." And he says, "Oh, that's great. What happened? How did all of this change?"
"My word."
"Whose word?" "Yes."
That was a byword, the butcher's word, that was passed around that the kids were unhappy and it got to their parents, and the parents must have coached their kids to be a little more friendly to the Americans, I guess.
That's a great hypothesis, and it's actually what happened. So some other, in this case, Filipina, came along, and maybe it's a she or he, but a she. She says, "Oh, Mr. Gonzalez, how are you today?" "Oh," he says, "I'm not so well, thank you." "Oh, are you ill?" No, I'm not ill, no." "Well, what's the problem, Mr. Gonzalez?" "Oh," he says, "it's the long nose down here." That's the word for Americans in the Philippines, the long nose. "Is the long nose got a problem?" No. "Well, maybe a little bit." What is the problem?" "Well, it's his children. They're unhappy." "Oh, Mr. Gonzalez, this is very sad. They had friends in America, and now they are finding it difficult to make friends here. And the children are very sad, and they are unhappy, and they wish they could go home." "Oh, Mr. Gonzalez, this is very sad. We must hope something is done about it." So then she goes to Mrs. Lopez. Mrs. Lopez says, "How are you today, Mrs. whatever her name is?" And she says, "Oh, I'm not feeling so well today." "Oh, are you ill?" "No, I'm not ill. It's a long nose." You know, they peel the onion again. You know, the onion gets, every layer comes off. And pretty soon the whole community knows, just like you said. Now, in the Philippines, If you have a problem, it's not my problem or your problem. It's our problem. If the long nose has a problem and a difficulty or his children, then it's all of us are responsible for finding a solution. So when the children come home that night to Filipino children, they say, hey, do you walk to school with the children of the long nose? And they say, yeah, we do. Well, what happens? Well, they walk on their side and we walk on our side and we don't have anything to do with them. No, 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 you don't understand. This is not the way we treat guests in our culture. We must make them feel comfortable. We must be happy with them. We must make friends with them. And you must do this. This is who we are. This is our nature. This is our way. And so all the children were instructed that night. The whole community. See, there's collectivism. It's not in the West we would say, you know, I'm sorry, but that's your problem, not mine. In a collectivistic society, it's our problem. But also notice that it was the use of a mediator, Mr. Gonzalez. So you have Don, and you have the people, the parents, and you have Mr. Gonzalez. He could have gone to the people and said, would you mind if your children paid more attention to my children? It would just really help us a lot. Could have been very gentle in all of that. But immediately the implication was that our children were being unkind to your children, and now we lose face. And he would have lost the trust of the community immediately. So instead, he went indirectly through another person, the mediator. What Don was also doing is that he had realized over time that in the marketplace, in this community where he lived, he realized that Mr. Gonzalez was the broker of information. He was the opinion leader. When he said something, people listened. People came to him for advice and counsel. And so when you detect that, you realize that here's the key person for a message to get communicated to the whole community, because people trusted him. And so it turned out that Mr. Gonzalez was a very good mediator. So the first way of handling conflict is through the use of a mediator. Let me give another example. I won't ask you to solve this problem, but I will in a moment have another problem for you. Westerners like to do problem solving, so I'm doing that with you. There was another couple that had moved into a Muslim community, I believe in Indonesia, and their children went to bed each night at about the time that the Muslim mosque siren would go off, the call to prayer. The mosque was relatively close to their house, and the siren was pointed directly at the bedroom of the children. And there really wasn't any other place to put them because that's how the house was built. And each night the siren would frighten the children, and they would wake up and be frightened. So this was a touchy situation. They were quite alert to cultural values, and they knew if they spoke directly to people in the mosque that would offend them. It would cause them to lose face, to feel shame, and the trust would not be there. How should we manage the situation? What can we do? What possibility is there? Well, this was early in their time there, and so they really didn't have any friends. They hadn't gotten to know people in the marketplace. Their children were waking up each night with these kinds of nightmare situations, frightened, sometimes maybe screaming. Well, their guard, the person they hired to protect their house at night, was the only one that they knew. So they talked to him and thought, just maybe. This couple had read my book, Cross-Cultural Conflict, and they thought, I wonder if Duane's right. Is what he says, does that really work or not? So the guard was the only person he knew. Well, guards, that's the lowest status in the world. It's the lowest paying job. Usually they have, you know, a little stick or something, but mostly they're just there and people are not going to be a problem if you have this guard. They're not big, strong people with military weapons or anything. Very low status. So they thought, well, it's the only person we know. So they said to the guard, we're having some difficulties. We don't know what to do. It's a problem. And he says, oh, what, tell me. And of course, then they rehearse the situation. And so 3 or 4 days go by, maybe closer to a week, and still the problem persists, and it doesn't look like anything's going to happen. Until one night, they realize that the siren has been noticeably more quiet for several nights now. They just didn't notice it. And so they go out to the guard, and they talk to the guard, and they say, did you do something that will help us that did this? And he says, well, I have a cousin who has a brother who works in the mosque. You know, relationship is everything in so many of these cultures. And everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who owes you a favor. And anyway, on it goes. So this cousin who has the brother who works in the mosque finally got the message, and they turned the siren the other way. And the problem was solved. The use of a mediator. But the mediator in this case wasn't directly the mediator. He began the story that carried on. And isn't it interesting how everybody feels obligated to find a solution? Even the Muslims, and this was a missionary family, a Christian family, and you would think that maybe they would say, you know what, tough luck. The siren is there. The siren's always been there. Tough luck. You know, that's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. Why should we bother with you anyway? You're a foreigner in our country. We're not even sure we want you here. I mean, they could have thought that. But interesting that many times these people who we think of as very different from us are generous and gracious and kind and willing to make these kinds of adjustments for the guest in their country. I think we should be equally kind and gracious in response. Well, so the use of the mediator, very common. This is the most common way of handling conflict throughout the world, especially not in the majority world situations. Now, as the metropolitan areas become more and more westernized through television, music, movies, and the presence of Western businessmen and so on, businesswomen. It's a mixture now of Western and majority world ways of handling. But if you're working with older people, or if you're working outside the metropolitan area, the mediator will still be the most common way of handling conflict. Now, let me tell you how this is kind of misunderstood at times. The mediator is a person of high status, typically, in the community. So the butcher was a person of high status, a person who was trusted, a person who they believed could do the right thing and save the face of the community, because there's community face, too. When South Korea had the Olympics, and you may not remember this, but at one point a Korean boxer lost the match, the boxing match, and the manager of the Korean boxer jumped into the ring and began to pound on the back of the American boxer. And the whole nation lost face in shame on that. Of course, the American television networks played this over and over and over. All over the world it was being shown. In America, we saw it on the morning news, the midday news, the evening news. We saw it the next day 3 or 4 times. I mean, this was so unusual. The Koreans felt such national shame about this that they said to the American media, you stop it or you're out. I mean, they said it more kindly, but that was it. And they can often get very direct when, it's a crisis like this. So most of the time they're indirect, but when it's a crisis situation or it's very tense, they can get direct. Well, the use of the mediator then. Now, sometimes, because Americans are known to be honest, they're known to be fair, they're known to be high-status people, they come to... If Igor here is a local person and I'm the American, And Igor wants me to be a mediator because I have this, you know, this kind of stature. He says to me, I'm having a difficulty with Olga or Sasha or somebody. And as soon as he starts talking and I realize his difficulties here, I say, oh, no, now you're gossiping. See what happens? I put him in my Western category. I say, no, you must go directly to that person and deal with the problem themselves. If you keep telling me this, then you're just going to be guilty of gossip. And so now I have told him he's wrong, and I've caused him to be shamed and to lose face. And now this friendship is gone. But he was actually paying me an honor, and he was seeing me as a good mediator. He was paying me a compliment. And I told him he was being a sinner. He was wrong. This was bad. And you see how quickly the misunderstanding comes in these situations.
We invite you to participate in the International Bible Teaching and Gospel Sharing Project. Whether these Christian expanded educational opportunities will become available to people around the world depends on all of us. We very much need and value your prayer and financial support. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
Let's move on. Second story. You need to solve this one. My friend Don, you know who he is now, arranges for a group of missionaries for a farewell dinner for a couple that are going home. So he arranges with this restaurant manager. It'll be this many people. They will all order from this menu of maybe three or four items. And everything was arranged. The night came. The people were all there. It was a wonderful time. And they also had agreed on the price for this many people. At the end of the evening, not the manager, but the maitre d', the waiter, came, and he hands Don the bill. Don takes the bill, and it's for about $40 more than the agreed upon price. Now we got a problem. If you were Don, what would you do? You remembered what the price was. It's $40 more. How would you handle this potential conflict situation? You don't want to make it worse. You want to handle it in a culturally appropriate way. You can't go out on the street and find a mediator, okay? So that one's gone. How do you handle this situation? We'll take one comment, and then I'll tell you the rest of the story for the sake of time.
Yeah, the problem, I mean, first, in the most polite way, to ask, okay, so what's this $40 for or something? And it depends. If he'll explain you, you might be understand the reason, like, say, postpone your judgment before you find out what was really, maybe there's a reasonable price in that. Mm-hmm. But if it's not, the question is, what if it's not a reasonable price? Where he just raise up the money and said, yeah, we just, feel it's better. It doesn't matter what we talked before. We just feel it's cost us more or something. Or
possibly the price went up.
The price went up or something. Better, yeah. I would say withhold the judgment and try to really to understand why the price goes up without blaming, accusing the right away. Saying
that, that would work beautifully in a Western country. But the fact that you're questioning it itself means that it's going to cause shame. But in a Western country, that would be perfect. That's what most Westerners would do. That's what we do. And we would think that it's going to be fine because I'm being gentle, I'm being gracious, I'm trying to understand. But it probably would cause severe shame and loss of face, and the friendship would be gone. Here's what Don did. He said, I'd like to see the manager, if you don't mind, if he's available, please. So the manager comes out and he says, Mr. Douglas, how was everything tonight? And my friend says, oh, it was wonderful. The food was delicious. People were very happy. It was an enjoyable evening. And then, of course, you make a little political statement. I'm sure many of these people will want to come and eat at your place in the future. You know, not bad to say that because business, all right? Oh, wonderful, Mr. Douglas. I'm so happy it was good for you. Is there anything I can do for you? I'm sorry. I shouldn't be. No, don't be. I don't want to bother you with this. Oh, Mr. Douglas, please. You know, because you know how the dance is. You know, if you know the dance, you know how to do it. And so, Mr. Douglas, please. Oh, I'm so ashamed. I feel terrible. Oh, please tell me what is the problem, Mr. Douglas. Maybe I can help. Please, come. Well, I brought this much money, and he names the original price, and I collected it from all the people, and now the price is this, and I'm going to have to go back and ask all my friends for more money. I feel so ashamed. They're going to think maybe I'm just putting it in my own pocket, or they're going to think I'm a bad, you know, just not a very good organizer. I shouldn't be troubling you with this. No, don't bother. Oh, Mr. Douglas, I see, I understand. Let me. He disappears. 2 minutes later, he comes back, and the original price is crossed out. His $40 more price is crossed out, and now a new price is written on the ticket to the bill. It's for $5 more than the original price. Now what do you do? Now we have to understand why he didn't come back to the original price. If we understand, then maybe we have a better way of making a decision. Why didn't he come back to the original price that they agreed upon?
Well, in that case, he would lose his face, because if he cheated, it would be, you know, obvious that he cheated.
Exactly right. Yep. He would lose face. And nobody inflicts on themselves loss of face or shame. So now you say, okay, I've got another $5. It's worth it to save the relationship. Furthermore, Don wants to come back and be there. He wants to make friends with this person. Who knows? Maybe this person will listen to his message. This is called the one down position. It's what I call it anyway. I don't know if there's a better word. Now, the one down position means that you put yourself in the position of being shamed or humiliated, and the other person automatically responds by, I can help you. I can protect your face. I can protect your honor. I can keep you from being shamed. And in majority world culture, that's a moral obligation that you have. If somebody is in danger of losing face and you have any kind of relationship at all, you must do what you can to protect face. Protect loss of face. In fact, there's something called building face, too. They do this all the time. So when I'm speaking in an Asian culture, or majority, even in Africa as well, in Latin America to some degree, my goodness, you'd think God was standing in front of them, the way they build up, oh, this marvelous, wonderful speaker from the West who knows everything there is ever to be known in the whole, you know, that kind of thing. That's called building face. And you say, this is ridiculous. I mean, from the West, that's how I'm thinking. Why are you saying this foolish stuff? Because it's not true. But they're building your face. That's a compliment. That's how they do it. Well, I'll take one more quick way, and then we'll be out of time. The third way, and this will be quicker, is through the use of story. I told you before about story, about the person who was stealing from the church and everything. And it's a way of indirectly, again, handling conflict. Here's a second indirect strategy. The third indirect strategy is the use of story. Story, parables, proverbs. And by telling the story, when you tell a story or drop a proverb, everybody knows, everybody in that context knows that you said something very strategic, very important, and you're trying to make a statement. Who is the statement for? Quickly. A tribe was, there was a man stealing cassava from other people's huts in this village. And as he was doing it, he would get caught. But then eventually other people started stealing. Pretty soon the tribe was weakened because everybody was enemy with each other. The tribe up in the hill realized that this tribe was now weak. They came down and conquered them. And they made them all captive. So now these people not only lose their happiness, but they lose all their cassava, they lose all of their freedom, and they are now slaves, and they now grow cassava for their enemies up on the hillside. This story was told by a Nigerian hospital administrator when one person was stealing from a cash box. There were three or four cash boxes in the hospital, but this one person was stealing. The Nigerian hospital administrator brought this to all of the people, about half of them Americans, half of them Nigerians, and he says, "What shall I do?" And the American says, "We call the person in individually, and we present the evidence, and hopefully he will confess, and we'll fix a way here." Now, the Nigerian says, "I think that would work in America, but I'm going to do it the Nigerian way." So he just told this story that I just told you. And he told it to all the people, including the four people at all of these cash boxes. They were there. And the person stopped stealing. It's a good chance that they knew this person was stealing, and they were thinking about it too, and that stopped them, and it stopped the person. But now, what about restitution? What about payback, recompense? Now, by using this indirect strategy of story, we rescued this person from continuing to be a thief. They allowed him to continue, but they changed his job a little bit. Another job. Didn't say why, just we have another job for you. I forget now whether they changed jobs or he stayed on. At any rate, he stopped stealing, all right? Now, what happened here in terms of recompense is that when others got a raise, he didn't get a raise. And then they judged that he had taken X number of so much money, and then when that money had come back by his not getting a raise, then he got a raise maybe 6 months or a year later, you see. And he knew what was happening. He knew others got a raise. He knew why he didn't get a raise. And it was all worked out behind the scenes. Now, if they would have called him in and said, "You've been stealing, we know it, here's the evidence," he would have lost face, he would have been shamed. And here's the way you deal with shame. You start another group. You leave the hospital and you start and you badmouth them, and you go off and you join someone else and you tell them how bad this place is. If you shame somebody in the church, they go off and start another church, and they take as many people with them as they can. That's what you do when you've been shamed. That's how you recover from your shame. If you want to learn something about Muslims, read about shame. The worst shame in the world is for a member of your family to leave the Muslim faith. The way you recover from the shame, if you're a very fundamentalist Muslim, is you have to kill that person, if possible. If you can't, then you burn every bit of clothing, all the items, all the pictures, everything. Because that's how you restore shame, restore face. That's how you regain honor. So this whole matter of how they manage conflict in the majority world has a lot to do with shame, face, and honor, has a lot to do with handling it indirectly so that they can maintain face, not lose face, maintain honor, and move ahead with a sense of value and worth.
Question about the approach. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit from the Christian point of view. Mm-hmm. Okay. When we read the Bible, Matthew, I think, 18, and Jesus said, how resolve the conflict? He said, go to your brother. It seems like a Western Greek way.
It does.
It looks like this. But at the same time, when you look what Jesus did himself, or you look in the Old Testament, like prophet mm-hmm. came to David and he tell him the story, and then something. Or Jesus talked with Pharisees, so he tell them the stories. That mm-hmm. He used the Asian way while he tell us to use the Greek way. How do you put this?
Well, when there was the great cosmic conflict between God and man, how did God manage the conflict? Mediator, Christ Jesus. So that was the worst, the ultimate, the cosmic way. Who was it that came to David and told him the story?
Nathan.
When Nathan came to David, and there was a conflict, serious conflict, how did Nathan, what did he use? A story, right? And David says, that's not good, that's a terrible person. And then, but David didn't get it. Really? Yeah? So what did Nathan do then?
You're the man.
He used a direct way. So in certain situations, you can be direct, particularly if you're in a, what they call the in-group. You're in solidarity with a group of people. You can be direct and say things directly then. If you're an outsider, you better use an indirect method first. And if that doesn't work, then maybe a direct method. So when I asked people in various countries, here's how you manage conflict. Does that meet the standards of Matthew 18? They say, of course. We're dealing with a problem. We're going directly to the person. But for them, direct is this way. And for us, direct is this way. But they have absolutely no hesitation in saying that that meets Matthew 18 standards. And I'm not sure but what they're right. I think that's true. Because they're dealing with a conflict. They're dealing with it in their way. It's dealing with it directly, even though they go through the mediator. But you read the Old Testament. The mediator is a very powerful person in the Old Testament. All right. Tomorrow, or the next session, we will be talking about a case study in the Old Testament. And from that, we'll draw principles of how to deal with most conflict situations. Thank you.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10-11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efca.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300. Or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.